brought to you by Charity Mobile, the phone company that shares your values. More information is available at charitymobile.com. Today I have for you an examination into a question that gets asked a lot these days. What are the limits to obedience? In the church, we're expected to be obedient to the accepted pontiff, to our bishops, to our priests. And it's a question people are asking a lot lately for very obvious reasons. And I have for you something from Father Nicholas Gruner, who was, until he passed away a few years ago, was like one of the leaders of the Fatima movement. And here he is talking in the context of the Fatima message about obedience, but he does touch on a great deal of the larger problems with obedience in the church in the face of all the innovations that we've seen in the church in the last few decades. He wrote this piece 10, 12, 15 years ago, somewhere around there, and you can find it all over the internet if you want to read it for yourself. But here is Father Nicholas Gruner on the question of false obedience in the church. Let me know what you think of this in the comments, please. The Role of False Obedience in the Post-Conciliar Crisis by Father Nicholas Gruner. Since Vatican II, there has been an unprecedented division of the church into warring camps that hoist their respective flags behind impenetrable fortifications. The emergence of these camps is the direct result of the supposed quote-unquote new orientation of the church since the council. A mirage, of course, but one that has provoked terrible damage in the church. The very existence of a previously unheard-of distinction between Novus Ordo and quote-unquote traditionalist Catholics tells us that the, quote, reforms of Vatican II have caused a disastrous quasi-schism within the church itself. Now, the quote-unquote traditionalists are simply the Catholics who did not change, whereas the leaders of the Novus Ordo constituency defend the novelties of the past 40 years as though they were defined dogmas of the faith, even though Pope Benedict has exposed the utter fraudulence of this posture by declaring that the ancient Mass was, quote, never abrogated, and that its use by every priest in the church was, quote, always permitted. The imposition of these novelties upon the church, and with it official opposition to the message of Fatima, has depended precisely on a false notion of obedience to ecclesial authority. None other than the present Pope himself, Benedict XVI, exposed this false notion when he was still Cardinal Ratzinger, quote, the Pope is not an absolute monarch whose will is law, but is the guardian of the authentic tradition, and thereby the premier guarantor of obedience. That is why, with respect to the liturgy, he has the task of a gardener, not that of a technician who builds new machines and throws the old ones onto the junk pile, end quote. Here Cardinal Ratzinger was commenting on what even the new catechism declares that, quote, even the supreme authority in the church may not change the liturgy arbitrarily, but only in the obedience of faith and with religious respect for the mystery of the liturgy, end quote. See the Catechism of the Catholic Church, paragraph number 1125, page 256. And what is true of the Pope, that his power and authority are limited by the obedience of faith, is all the more true of his subordinates. Yet in their ranks, the obedience of faith has widely been replaced in the post-conciliar epoch by obedience to their own authority for its own sake. Positivism, my will is law, and nominalism, what I will is good because I will it, have invaded the church, cloaking their abuses in the virtue of obedience, which seems to have become the only virtue insisted upon by ecclesiastical authority. It is no coincidence that this invasion of the church by positivism and nominalism coincides with the invasion of the church by worldly thinking that Paul VI lamented. But too late, for the opening of the world had already begun to inflict its incalculable damage, and the smoke of Satan, he also belatedly lamented, had already entered the church through the fissures he noticed only after the smoke had entered. True obedience, the obedience of faith. Of course, what is true of the liturgy is true of everything else in the church. There is an obedience of faith higher even than the obedience to men, higher even than obedience to the Pope, as the reigning pontiff, Benedict XVI, has observed. We ought to obey God rather than men. See Acts chapter 5, verse 29. Indeed, all authority is derived from divine authority, for if there was no God, there would be no ground on which any man could stand to assert authority over another, but only various quote-unquote social contracts resting on, quote, consent. All authority on earth, both temporal and spiritual, from the parent to the policeman to the politician, from the priest to the prelate to the pope, is ultimately derived from divine authority. All those who exercise authority of whatsoever kind, even papal authority, must exercise that authority in conformity with the divine will. And all who obey authority of whatsoever kind must obey divine authority first. The failure to recognize and acknowledge the obedience which is absolutely due to God above all human authority is what is wrong with the modern notion of authority. It accounts for the moral, political, and social chaos of our time. And that same chaos, as Paul VI lamented too late, has infected even the human element of the church, producing the paradoxical situation of demands to respect authority that contravenes the very basis of all true authority, the divine will for man. Now, since all authority comes from God, we obey men because, and only because, their authority ultimately is based upon God's authority. And this obedience, where it does not contravene God's law, is actually an act of justice, of giving to another and ultimately to God what is due. But God does not give any man the authority to command, nor anyone the right to obey a command that contravenes the commands he has given us, including the Decalogue and the law of the gospel, which is the positive law of Christ the King. Moreover, all authority on earth is limited by God's decree. Not even the Pope has unlimited authority. We know the limitation of the Pope's authority by revelation, sacred scripture, and the teaching of the authentic magisterium, both ordinary and universal, as well as the extraordinary magisterium in its dogmatic definitions. As St. Augustine says, God is order. Therefore, there is a hierarchy of authority. The command of the higher authority, when he is within the ambit of his jurisdiction, supersedes the command of the lower authority. There is a hierarchy of angels, a hierarchy of being and nature, and a hierarchy of authority in the church. Our Lady's authority after that of her divine Son is the highest authority in the church and the world. Our Lady's authority after that of her divine Son is the highest authority in the church and the world. It must be noted that the Blessed Virgin Mary, as Queen of Heaven and Earth, and Mother of all the living, has real maternal and royal authority over each one of us, every member of the human race, and particularly every Catholic, including each and every priest, bishop, and cardinal, and finally, the Pope himself. On October 13, 1917, the Queen of Heaven and Earth commanded the Son, and even the Son obeyed her. So must all her children, no matter what their rank in the Church. The message of Fatima, with its solutions for the Church, is precisely an exercise of her authority over the entire Church, the Pope included. It is impossible for the sinless and ever-Virgin Mother of God, possessed of the beatific vision in a unique and unequaled way, to abuse or exceed her authority. Therefore, when she commands, we must obey. Even the Pope must obey her. Hence, obedience to the message of Fatima, which means obedience to the Mother of God, is subsumed under the concept of obedience of faith binding even the Pope to act for the faith, for the salvation of souls above all else. Which brings me to the question of the third secret in particular, and its relation to the problem of false obedience. Now we know with certainty that the missing text of the secret, the one that is well hidden in the Vatican, involves the famous words of Our Lady recorded in Sister Lucia's fourth memoir, quote, "In Portugal, the dogma of the faith will always be preserved," etc. And we know that an Austrian Jesuit, Father Joseph Schweigel, went on a mission by Pius XII to interrogate Sister Lucia concerning the contents of the secret in 1952, revealed that the secret, quote, has two parts. One concerns the Pope. The other, logically, although I must say nothing, would have to be the continuation of the words, "In Portugal, the dogma of the faith will always be preserved," end quote. Thus, we know that the text comprising the missing second part of the third secret records precious words of the Virgin for which Sister Lucia held the place with her, etc. But the Vatican Secretary of State, Cardinal Bertone, continues to maintain the fiction that the not-easy-to-decipher vision of the bishop dressed in white, which has received a welter of conflicting interpretations, is all there is to the third secret of Fatima. He steadfastly and most tellingly refused to inquire of Sister Lucia regarding the momentous etc., even though he had every opportunity to do so over the 5 years of controversy that raged from the time the vision was published in 2000, to widespread skepticism about the completeness of the Vatican's disclosure until Sister Lucia's death in 2005. Or perhaps he did inquire and is in possession of information he has deemed expedient not to reveal. Now, however, the partisans of a false and blind obedience to authority counsel us to forget the very words of the Mother of God because a Vatican functionary has deemed them indispensable. One such spokesman, Antonio Borelli of Tradition, Family, and Property, who professes to be a champion of Our Lady of Fatima, declares that the words embraced by the telltale etc. will remain forever an inexplicable mystery, and that it is a great disappointment that it has not been possible to resolve the question of the etc., but we have to work with concrete, unavoidable fact. Really? And why is that? According to Mr. Borelli, the answer is simply and only because a human authority will have it so. And a human authority, moreover, who has no authority in the matter, as the Vatican Secretary of State is a creation of men, not God, and is in no way part of the divine constitution of the Church. Indeed, Pius XII dispensed with the office during his pontificate. And it was when he was serving as Secretary of State under Pius XI that the future Pius XII made the startling and prophetic statement, quote, "I am worried by the Blessed Virgin's message to little Lucia of Fatima. This persistence of Mary about the dangers which menace the Church is a divine warning against the self-destruction of altering the faith, in her liturgy, her theology, and her soul. I hear all around me innovators who want to dismantle the sacred chapel, destroy the universal flame of the Church, reject her ornaments, and make her feel remorse for her historical past. A day will come when the civilized world will deny its God, when the Church will doubt as Peter doubted. She will be tempted to believe that man has become God. In our churches, Christians will search in vain for the red lamp where God awaits them. Like Mary Magdalene weeping before the empty tomb, they will ask, where have they taken him?" It seems more than probable that the very catastrophe the future Pius XII foresaw is predicted in great detail by the words of the Virgin in Fatima to be found within the troublesome, etc. But the partisans of false obedience argue that we must put the matter out of our minds to suit the wishes of Cardinal Bertone and all those who have no authority to conceal any message of the part of the message of Fatima. So that was Father Nicholas Gruner, who was associated with the Fatima Center until his passing a few years ago. And he had often been himself accused of being disobedient to the Church and not accepting the Church's narrative on Fatima and the state of the Church after the Council. Here he gave us really the question about false obedience, and what he's saying is pretty straightforward. That this question is sort of a false one itself, because at the end of the day, the popes and the hierarchy have for decades been disobedient to heaven on the Fatima question. And you can sort of, in theory, go from there rather easily. It's rather straightforward. If they've been disobedient on that, and they've been disobedient to the deposit of the faith by changing as much as they did in the late 60s and into the 70s and beyond, we don't have any obedience on those things, because they are themselves being disobedient to what it is they're supposed to be doing as members of the hierarchy. Now, that's not easy for some people to hear. There are those who will disagree with that, who think that everything is just fine in the Church and that mainly Francis is the problem. But the real awakening in the Church is for, you know, traditionally minded Catholics from across that sort of trad and conservative spectrum to realize that the problems in the Church predate Francis by a long shot, and that he is just sort of the manifestation of the logical outcomes of all the changes that have been made as the modernists move into the next phase of foisting on the Church their wicked designs and their weird strategies and schemes to make the Church more and more worldly. But I want to know what you thought about this in the comments. So let me know what you thought of this in the comments, please. And like and subscribe if you haven't. It really does help. As always, pray for the Church. I'm Anthony Stein. Ave Maria.